who's ever paid taxes and wondered, where did these dollars go? How is this parsed out to everyone? And what kind of decision-making process goes into this? Well, live in studio this morning from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, we welcome Ryan Olson and Michael LaFave, and they've got a new book out called A Michigan School Money Primer for Policymakers, School Officials, Media, and Residents. And it really is hard to sort through these issues, I think, for the average person, Michael, to figure these things out.
The system is Byzantine, and that's one thing that Ryan and I took away from this, is it's so complex that the average citizen's not going to be able to understand how their child's school gets funding. You know, there are 30 different tax sources from the federal, state, and local units of government that fund our schools. $19 billion, or $12,000 per student, coming in from all different directions and being redispersed in all different directions. It's very complex.
And Ryan, describe how your book is set up, what the sections are, and how you guys tackled this.
We wrote a section on revenues, describing where all the money comes from, local, state, federal sources. Wrote a section on appropriations, how the money is distributed to schools once it's all collected, and then a section on school budgeting, what schools do once they have the money.
How hard was this to get sort through all of this?
It was very difficult. We poured through about 376 pages of Michigan compiled law, and these are tightly formatted, small margined pages of law. We went directly back to original sources. We looked at court decisions. We looked at local and intermediate school district documents. We looked at administrative documents from the Michigan Department of Education, the U.S. Department of Education. We really wanted to go back to the sources, and we cited all those sources. There are more than 600 combined footnotes and endnotes in this text, so that anybody could go back if they wanted more information, look at the source, and get that information for themselves.
And that was for revenue and appropriations. For the budget section alone, we had to go back to the Michigan Public School Accounting Manual and audit practices as well, which is hundreds and hundreds of pages of details.
One would note that a primer usually means something short, which this isn't necessarily.
Yeah, it's about 180 pages, and we'd originally anticipated that it would be shorter, but the system is so complex that to give a plain language description of, you know, some of the basic features of the system took many more pages. But we think we've, and from the feedback we've heard, done a pretty good job of describing it in plain language.
There were times during our research when we had questions for MDE officials, Michigan Department of Education officials, with an expertise in a particular area, and we stumped them. Yeah, that's how difficult this subject is. The experts had to rely on colleagues in another department, and each would tell the other one to go ask their colleague at Treasury or Michigan Department of Education. So it's very difficult to get some answers.
It makes you wonder then where this money trail really is going, I think.
Yeah, and we did a lot of interviews with U.S. Department of Education officials, Michigan Department of Education officials, so we could see how the policy really works. I mean, we looked at the law, described that, but then wanted to see, how is this really working out? How does the accounting really work?
Right.
How is the money really
distributed? Give everyone a thumbnail sketch from our tax dollars and back into our schools. How does it happen?
Well, there are more than 30 taxes, as mm-hmm. Mike mentioned, mm-hmm. more than 30 taxes that are collected and contribute to financing primary and secondary public schools in the state of Michigan. These include local school district property taxes for operating purposes on non-homestead property. They include hold harmless millages, which are levied by many districts in this area of Michigan, in southeast Michigan. They include capital millages, sinking funds, debt service levies for issuing bonds.
And if anyone ever wondered what the definitions of all of those terms are, you list those in here.
That's right, yeah. Somebody can go to the book and mm-hmm. look up all these terms. But those are local school district taxes. Then there are intermediate school district taxes. There's an allocated tax, an operating millage that's separate, a vocational technical education millage, a special education millage, that all can be levied by intermediate school districts.
And an example of that here locally is our Washtenaw Intermediate School District, the WISD.
Right, which will levy a special education tax, perhaps a vocational technical education tax. A couple of ISDs in the state also levy regional enhancement taxes, which is an additional property tax for operating purposes. Then you look at the state level. There are a number of taxes whose revenue go to, you know, contribute to the school aid fund. The sales tax, about 73.3% of the revenue from the sales tax goes to the school aid fund. About a third of revenue from the use tax goes to the school aid fund. A portion of the cigarette tax, a portion of the income tax, all state lottery profits, all of the real estate transfer tax.
Didn't the state lottery profits, though, replace another funding source when that came into play, or no? I had always heard that described that way, that these aren't really extra monies that are coming into the schools, the lottery monies. Yes or no?
They didn't really replace any. It was an addition.
It was
an addition
was
of money.
Yeah. Now it brings in about $670 million?
Yeah.
A year.
It did last year, yeah. Yeah, which is only about 5 or 6% of the total school aid fund. There's a lot of money. There's a lot of money in the system. As Mike said, about $12,000 per student.
Mike, just keep in mind that the school aid fund raises and distributes about $13 billion of the total $19 billion that is used in public education throughout Michigan. People commonly make the mistake that we're only spending $13 billion a year on public education, when in fact the number is much higher because of the local taxes that Ryan's just listed.
That's amazing. A Michigan school money primer for policymakers, school officials, media, and residents. And our guests are from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, Ryan Olson and Michael Lefebvre. You frequently take a conservative think tank and approach to things and aren't shy about giving opinions. However, this does not take an opinion on how these funds are used.
We are a free market research institute, less conservative. We don't use political labels. However, we went out of our way to be very, very careful not to make any policy recommendations in this primer. We just wanted to give a plain language description of how the system works to help with the transparency issue. Parents, knowledge is power, and the more knowledge parents have, the better they can make decisions for their children. And, of course, the more knowledge taxpayers have, the more decisions they can make for their own pocketbooks.
Where do charter schools and other kinds of school setups come into play with this money?
Charter schools, of course, are public schools, and they receive a district foundation allowance just like conventional public schools receive. On average, they receive about $1,000 less than conventional public schools. And what's interesting is that charter schools are performing at about the same level. Some are doing a little worse than conventional public schools, some are doing a little better, but on average, about at the same level as conventional public schools.
Despite the fact they're getting a little bit less money.
Exactly, despite the fact that they're able to spend less money.
Hmm.
So, you know, there's a lot of research to support this point that what's really important in terms of student achievement and school outcomes is not how much is being spent. People usually think that if we simply add more money to the system, we'll get better schools. But the fact is that since 1970, we've more than doubled what we are spending in schools, even after adjusting for inflation, while at the same time results have been basically flat.
There are some interesting stats that were released recently in an Ann Arbor News article written by David Jesse, talked about school spending and the districts and how they all compare in their spending when it comes to instruction versus the support services, which would include the administration and other kinds of things, that local school districts here in the Washtenaw County area spend just over 58% of their budgets on classroom instruction, slightly below the state average of 59%. And in total, area public school districts spent more than $540 million on items categorized by the state as instruction. The district spent a combined $924 million in total. But when you take a look at some of these breakdowns on here, on the state averages, it's just interesting that, for instance, Brighton spent the most on instruction, that they had a commitment to wanting to give that money in that and then save in other areas, 65% going towards that.
Mm-hmm.
Ann Arbor, I think, is somewhere in the middle of the pack. Whitmore Lake, 59%. Ann Arbor was 56%. Willow Run was at the bottom of the list at 50%. Is there anything that dictates to schools how that money has to be spent?
Districts receive a foundation allowance, and that is basically to be used for operating purposes. It can be used for any purposes, really. Then this is separated from capital funding, which can only be used for buildings, renovations, improvements, purchasing property, those sorts of things. So there's a division of revenue. But the majority of funding comes through the district foundation allowance, which is an amount that every district receives combined state and local sources. And that money can be spent however the district wants it to be spent. One thing that's interesting to note in terms of percentage of money going to the classroom for instruction is that a lot of districts around the state are finding ways to save money by competitively contracting or by looking at controlling health insurance costs, which allows them then to direct more money to the classroom. And we know district after district after district that has done this successfully.
And some of them locally here. We're going to talk about that coming up. 7:55 in the morning, our guests are from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Ryan Olson and Michael LaFave will take your calls at 822-1600. If you've got a question or comment concerning our school monies, Michigan School Money Primer is their book from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Liz Margolis is on the line from the Ann Arbor Public Schools, chief spokesperson. Liz, great to have you join the conversation this morning with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Ryan and Michael are here. What's your question?
Hi. You know, I just wanted to say that one of the best things these gentlemen are doing is exposing how complicated the financial and funding system is in this state. When we talk about the difference between charters and publics and the achievement level, which, by the way, charters are excellent because they do compete with us, we don't talk about the breadth of programming, though, that each different schools offer. And in Ann Arbor, we have a very high breadth of programming and expectation by parents.
All right, Ryan, real quick comment before we go at the top.
Yeah, that's very true. The thing about charter schools is that no one is forced to go to a charter school. So a parent is actually choosing to go to the charter school and to receive that programming at that charter school.
We're going to continue our conversation after the break on school financing on WAAM.
Ann Arbor's talk and information station.
Talk Radio 1600 WAAM Ann Arbor.
Talk Radio 1600 WAAM. All this time I should have been calling Ryan Olson Dr. Olson. Congratulations on getting your doctorate from Oxford University.
Thank you very much.
In classical languages and literature?
Yes.
Not economics?
Not economics.
Yeah, you know
no.
The numbers here.
Right.
And Michael LaFave. Michael is the director of the Maury Fiscal Policy Initiative for the Mackinac Center. Ryan Olson joined the Mackinac Center for Public Policy a couple of years ago and is the director of the center's Education Policy Initiative. The Mackinac Center is located in Midland, Michigan. You're listening to Lucianne Lance in the morning. It is 8:12 at WAAM. And you both are products of the public schools here in the state of Michigan, right?
We are indeed.
Yeah. Michael, where did you grow up?
Traverse City. Mm-hmm. Beautiful place to grow up from the time I was 5 to the time I left when I was 18. So.
You have undergrad and grad degrees in economics from Central Michigan University.
That's correct.
And Michael has served as an adjunct faculty member at the Midland, Michigan campus of Northwood University, where he has taught American economic history and economics of public policy. And Dr. Olson has taught English composition at a private college in Michigan, tutored students in the humanities and classical Greek, and taught Roman history classes in his community as well. They're live down here in Ann Arbor today, graciously coming into our studio to talk about their book, A Michigan School Money Primer. And if anyone's ever wondered about their tax dollars, how schools are financed, this explains it all. And it's, well, it's up to the minute right now, at least for this year, right, guys?
It is.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, people can go online, though, and they can actually adapt this for their own particular situation.
That's right. Listeners can go to mackinac.org, mackinac.org, and run customized reports about any public school district in the state, about any charter school in the state, any ISD in the state, and the state as a whole for 3 years of financial data. They can look at revenues, where all the revenues are coming from. They can look at spending for administrative salaries, for example, instructional salaries, teacher benefits, and so on. They can look at one district and compare, you know, a previous year to the current year. They can compare two different districts because we've calculated the figures on a total amount and then also per pupil amount. So it gives people a way to compare districts to see how districts are doing compared to one another.
Our phone number is 822-1600. If you have questions this morning concerning school financing, 822-1600. Give us a call to talk with Ryan and Michael. And Michael, you were telling me during the break that you have a greater appreciation, you and Ryan, now for what our local districts have to do to come up with this financing.
Much greater. We took away much more respect and sympathy for our local superintendents and their business officers just for the budgeting process, because they're always forced to work with a moving financial target. You know, school districts have to close out their budget on June 30th and move on to the next one. So they have to approve next year's budget by June 30th, while the state has not yet told them what they're going to give them in terms of a foundation allowance.
Why aren't those dates married up then?
Well, there's actually a bill that would mandate the state alert schools earlier in the year when they're going to have or what amount of money they're going to have each year to make the local district budgeting much easier. And I think I'm sympathetic towards that towards that policy change, given the difficulty that these local officials face when trying to plan for the next year. And they're often balancing three budgets at the same time, the one they just closed out and is being audited, the one they're in the middle of and which sometimes has prorated changes made to it by the state mid-year, then the one they've got a plan for in the future.
Michael LaFave and Ryan Olson, a Michigan school money primer on Talk Radio 1600 WAAM. Let's go to a call. 822-1600 is our number this morning. Hi there. What's your question?
Yes. My question is, why is the cost of educating students at public schools here in Michigan so much more than in parochial schools?
Ryan?
Well, in a lot of schools, there are school districts, there are bureaucracies, administrative layers. There are costs for dealing with school employee unions. There's a pension system that increases costs significantly. Health insurance in conventional public schools is a very significant issue that many public schools are facing. We're doing a survey right now, actually, of private and parochial schools in the state of Michigan, and we have found that the average tuition charged, and this is the maximum tuition, is about $4,700. So that's pretty close to the actual cost for a private or parochial school to educate a student, $4,700. In Michigan, revenues per student, as we said before, are about $12,000. And most studies show that students in private and parochial schools are performing at a higher level than students in public schools. So they're getting a better result for far less money, less than half
the
money.
Are we to assume that those teachers then do not have the same kinds of or as great of benefits that the public schools administrators and teachers do?
It's a possibility, but what's interesting is to look at satisfaction surveys comparing public school teachers and private school teachers. And usually what you find is that private school teachers are much more satisfied, feel that they are sort of pulling together in a team effort, receive more cooperation from parents, particularly because parents in private schools have been able to participate in their children's education in the most basic way by choosing where they go to school and what teachers they'll have and so on. In the public system, it's so hard to gauge parental engagement right now because most parents in the state of Michigan lack the ability to participate in their children's education in the most basic way.
Don't you think, though, that the fact that when you go to a private school, a parochial school, that it also has something to do with you're in line with the thinking of that school or the way things are handled, and that creates greater satisfaction as well?
It's a possibility, yeah. But still, I mean, teachers are trying to do the same thing. I mean, private schools have the same mission, providing a quality education, the same mission that public schools do. And in terms of unity in the school, private schools more and more are receiving disadvantaged students because parents are saying, you know, we realize there are major problems in the public school system regarding student learning, regarding safety, and so more and more parents are choosing private schools or charter schools or some other arrangement.
And I would suggest that private and parochial schools have to keep their pencils sharper and always stay on that edge and counting that last penny because they face greater competition, not only from their private and parochial colleagues, but from charters. In fact, some private and parochial schools have converted into charters because all they had to do was drop their religious requirement. And then, of course, the public schools, which are spending $12,000 per student and probably have more diversified programming and more athletics and that sort of thing. So that competition keeps them far more focused than I think you'd find in other districts that are getting $7,000 or more per student, regardless of overall performance.
And we're seeing some effects of that competition in public schools in the state of Michigan. Conventional public school districts that have to compete with charter schools, say in the Detroit area where there are 40-plus charter schools in the metro Detroit area. Detroit Public Schools, for example, has said, you know, on the record, the outgoing CEO of Detroit Public Schools said that the district looked at what charter schools in the area were doing to attract parents, particularly in the area of reading instruction and school safety, and they really attempted to draw parents back to the district that they're assigned to, Detroit Public Schools, by improving in those areas. So, and we're seeing that all over the state, that conventional public schools are responding to the very limited amount of competition that they have.
Our number is 734-822-1600. Question, comment, call us, 822-1600. Ryan Olson and Michael LaFave of the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. The book is A Michigan School Money Primer. Primer. That's our first lesson today. It's primer or primer? Primer.
Primer, yeah.
8:20 in the morning, and this update on your roads and traffic right now. Plus, we're going to talk about privatization of some of these services in our... Let's go to a quick call before we go to the break. Barbara, you're on the line this morning with Ryan Olson and Michael LaFave from the Mackinac Center. What's your question or comment?
My question is about how much more money the school systems receive for special education students versus regular education students. Do you have that kind of information?
Yeah, special education students are funded at the state and federal levels. School districts receive the full foundation allowance, district foundation allowance, for special education students. They also receive a categorical payment if percentages are applied to the amount of the cost approved by the Department of Education for special education services and special education transportation. And if the amount that they've received in the foundation allowance isn't high enough, they get an additional payment. Furthermore, they get another payment if the funding levels aren't to what they received in 1997. Plus, there's ISD money involved in special education, too. ISDs can levy a special education millage as well. So they do receive more funding than general education students do.
What if a parent thinks that those dollars aren't being spent appropriately for his or her child? What I hear from special education parents of special ed students is that they have to fight for everything to be written into those IEPs in order for them to get the service, the level of service they think their kids deserve, and the state mandate.
Absolutely, and parents of children with special needs often know the system much better than the people running the system do, because they have to know every rule so that they can fight for their children. It's interesting, an alternative program that the state of Florida has, essentially a scholarship program that's available to students with special needs, where parents can send their child with a special need to a private or parochial school and receive about half of the amount that the public school would receive to educate that child. A survey was done a couple of years ago of parents whose children received the scholarship, and 93% of parents were satisfied with the education their children were receiving in private or parochial schools, even though those schools were spending about half of what public schools were spending to educate children with
special
needs.
Do we know why?
Well, the private schools were catering to their needs. They were listening to parents. They were trying to attract parents with their services. And so, you know, the natural result of that is that parents were satisfied. And we could see this much more if we had more competition in the system in Michigan. We could save money in the state budget. We've estimated about $680 million if we adopted a universal education tax credit. We have a tax credit for preschool, we have a tax credit for higher education. K-12 is amazingly unique in that system. We could save the state money, we could help improve public schools who are then competing more with private schools, and we could also improve parental satisfaction, which is a huge issue.
Then why aren't
we
doing this?
Well, we aren't doing this because to this point, people just haven't been willing to look at giving parents more choices in education, even though in areas like Detroit, parents are crying out for more choices for their children.
All right, coming back, we'll get their thoughts on privatization as well as maybe a solution to help out with the economic crisis in our public schools on WAAM now.
Really, private has a full-service operation. We've been with Chartwell for quite some time now, and if you read the paper the last couple of years, one of the things that I recommended, but unfortunately we have not had support, as we tried to privatize our transportation system. We wanted to consolidate and work cooperatively with three school districts, Ypsilanti, Lincoln, and Willow Run, and provide a unitary transportation system. But unfortunately, we haven't been able to convince the policy individual, that mean our board members, to support that as of yet. But
that was Dr. James Hawkins yesterday on Talk Radio 1600 WAAM. We were talking about the privatization of schools, and Ypsilanti, like some other districts, have gone with the food service privatization. But as you heard the superintendent say, he has not been able to convince them to do the bus service. And the kind of unique approach to consolidating with other districts.
unique and something the Mackinac Center has long called on, gaining economies of scale by linking up with other districts. We originally were recommending this for the very small districts up towards the UP that said, we can't do it, we're too small. We said, meet with other districts and come to an agreement together, and I'm sure you'll attract a contractor. But that's not really necessary. Up in the UP, they have very small school districts, even with 13 students in one district, and they found contractors to provide services.
What about the employees that are currently doing those services, Ryan?
Many of them are hired again by the district, if they're, you know, by the company that's mm-hmm. contracted with, if they're doing a good job.
The companies often have an incentive to hire that expertise. The districts encourage it, but they don't necessarily mandate it. And some of these companies, like Chartwell's, actually goes out and holds job fairs to interview them and show them how they do business in other districts.
Survey is coming out next week. You can't reveal the details right now, but talk about the privatization and some of the numbers from previous years.
Since 2001, we've been surveying school districts statewide, and in every one of the last four surveys, school contracting has grown. 2007 will show another dramatic increase, especially in janitorial contracting. We've seen a 25% expansion from 05 to 06 in janitorial contracting, and the next figure from 06 to 07 is pretty close.
What happened in Redford?
Redford Union years ago laid off a bunch of teachers. Parents held bake sales to hire them back. The Mackinac Center went in and said, no, don't do that. Contract out the three major services, and if you don't save the money you need to hire them back, we'll pay the difference. But the board chose to lay off the teachers instead.
And you were giving them a great deal there.
Couldn't lose money.
Here's Evelyn this morning on WAAM. Good morning, Evelyn.
Good morning. I'm close to my 80s, and I don't have kids in school anymore, naturally. And I hear about these charter schools, but I don't know what a charter school is. What is the difference between that and a private school?
Thank you, Evelyn.
Well, a charter school is a public school. It's part of the public school system. A charter school is authorized by one of four authorizing bodies, including public universities. And charter schools, essentially, they're not part of a larger school district. They're their own school district. And they receive, on average, as I said, about $1,000 less per pupil. They still hire state-certified teachers. They still participate in assessments.
Often, don't they have a particular focus, too?
Many of them can, yeah. And this is one way that they found that they can attract more students, focusing on arts or something else.
If you have access to the net, go online to Mackinac.org. That's Mackinac with a C, Mackinac.org. And you can download for your district exactly what the situation is with this funding. Also, pick up a copy of a Michigan School Money Primer. Where can you get this, Michael?
The Mackinac Center for Public Policy. You can email an order or call it in. It's $10.
All right. Well worth it. 8:30 news next. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.